A gas station lay at the intersection. The station was surprisingly modern, considering the rustic nature of the town. Court attributed this to the fact that it was on the highway, and Sudan did possess a relatively robust system of bus travel between major cities. The soldier's jeep was parked in the unpaved lot of the gas station, and a Russian PKM light machine gun sat mounted in the back under a black plastic cover. Many locals stood around the station, finding refuge there after having fled the center of Suakin, and the soldiers had their hands full with the crowd of people milling about. Court had walked up to the jeep, careful to keep his turban covering virtually his entire face, and he took a look inside. The keys were not with the vehicle, which meant he needed to figure out which of these soldiers was the driver. He had a plan boiling in his head, but for now, he just needed to wait for Zack. The two malls and the shacks and shops erected all around them were a flutter of activity now. Everywhere, soldiers moved with weapons up, screaming at civilians to get out of the way, and the civilians screamed back. Beasts of burden clogged the alleyways, and a bucket brigade of rail-thin men dumped water on the last of the fire in the souk that surrounded the blackened helicopter and the charred remains inside. The soldiers pushed these men away as well, but the locals reformed their line and went back to work, so desperate was their need to keep their subsistence-level incomes alive by preventing their shops and their wares from going up in black smoke with the chopper. But Zack, Brad, Dan, and Milo were not moving, were not running away or blasting themselves clear to safety. Instead, they lay prone, 50 yards north of the two malls, on the second floor of a two-story mud-brick building ringed by a low wall. The men all looked out the open arched passageway to the balcony, across the balcony, over the wall, over the road, and across a sandy runoff depression that led east to the harbor. On the other side of the depression, some 200 meters away, was the bus station, and outside the bus station, sitting in the dirt, propped against a wall and surrounded by over two dozen soldiers, was a muscular black man, obviously wounded, but obviously alive. Sierra 5. Through the four-power scope of Hightower's TAR-21, the only weapon with optics left on the team, he could see that Spencer's shirt had been removed, and he bled from the face and neck and shoulders, and blood stained his brown pants. His torso was covered in the gleam of perspiration, along with the crimson shine of his blood. He'd been handcuffed behind his back. He was conscious, and a civilian man knelt in front of him, talking to him. Every now and then, he turned the American's face towards him to ask him a question, then slapped him or punched him. Zack knew Spencer wasn't going to say a word in response to a little rough stuff, but he also knew the harsh treatment he was now being subjected to would deteriorate in seconds into real torture. And there was nothing he could do to save him.
Sierra 1 for Sierra 6.
Go ahead for 6.
You ready to try an exfiltration?
Affirmative. I just need to know where you are.
As soon as you find 5, let's do it. Every second we wait is another second where I risk compromise.
Zack relayed his exact coordinates and then said,
They've got 5. We have eyes on. He's alive, but unreachable.
No transmissions came through the headsets for several seconds. Finally, Court responded,
Okay. Understand you have a line of sight?
Zack nodded in the darkened room.
A dingy white curtain blew in the hot breeze in front of him, momentarily obscuring his view of his man.
Zack knew what Court was asking. Court was a pro among pros. Of course he understood what must be done. Hightower flipped the safety on his Tavor, rendering his weapon hot.
Affirmative, 6. I have line of sight. He's at the bus station just north of us.
Gentry's next transmission broke a short still.
I'll do it. I'll head down the hill and get eyes on. You just sit tight, and I'll take care of it.
The other three men in the room with Zack said nothing. Hightower knew that they all understood what was going to happen, but only Gentry offered to do it. Court Gentry was one hell of a guy.
Negative, kid. I appreciate it, but this is my job. It's what they pay me for, I guess.
You sure?
Affirm. Just tell me you're ready to pick us up.
I've got a diversion set up here. I'll need about 30 seconds to be underway, And another 2 mics to be right on top of you guys. Roger that. Make ready. We go on my mark.
Dan was closest to Zack, just 2 feet off his left shoulder. He reached out and patted his boss on the arm, gave him a sympathetic squeeze. Hightower shrugged off the hand. Everyone on the team knew what was about to happen. They played by a set of rules that included this eventuality.
God damn it, said Zack softly.
The men beating the shit out of Spencer now were blocking his shot. The aiming reticle on his Tavor was lined up on the tailbone of a secret policeman. Hightower wanted to squeeze the trigger, but killing one NSS officer was not worth exposing their position. At this point, there was only one thing worth exposing their position: preventing Sierra 5 from revealing his identity or mission to the Sudanese. He wouldn't do it willingly, but he would do it, and there was only one way to stop it. Just then, Hightower squinted into his scope. There was a ruckus of some sort on the other side of the secret policeman. Soldiers ran forward, one fell back in the dirt, another spun away down to his knees. The NSS officer blocking Sierra 1's view was pushed aside, and then Sierra 5 appeared, bloody and shirtless still, his hands shackled behind him.
6, execute in 5 seconds, said Zack. Go in 5, Roger, came the terse reply.
Spencer ran free of the scrum of men, showing incredible balance and fitness to do so. He head-butted another soldier and made it 10 yards closer to Hightower's position, near the edge of the sandy depression.
He's trying to get away,
said Milo, watching without benefit of a rifle scope.
No, he's not, said Zack softly. He blinked. He's trying to help me get a better shot.
To the west, they heard handgun rounds and the boom of an explosion, Court's diversion, and in his scope, Zack saw Spencer drop to his knees, saw his bloodied mouth move in a shout, and an instant later, the distant sound made it to Hightower's position.
Send it! Sending.
Sierra 1 pressed the trigger on the Tavor, sent a 5.56mm round down the barrel, through the arched passageway, across the depression, and into the forehead of his man. Spencer's head snapped back, and he dropped still in the dirt, his body coming to rest on top of his restrained arms. Within seconds, close gunfire began pocking the walls in the room. The white curtain whipped and tore and shredded, and dust from impacts between steel and clay bricks turned the air around the remaining members of Whiskey Sierra a smoky brown. Chapter 41.
Sierra 6 is Oscar Mike, ETA 4-5 seconds.
Zack acknowledged Court's transmission.
6 is on the move, Roger.
Court drove out of the gas station in the open-topped Jeep. Behind him, flames rocked 70 feet into the air from a burning fuel line that spun and bounced across the concrete, swinging wildly in all directions from the gas pump. 2 of the soldiers were dead by Court's gunfire, and 2 more had been stabbed in the liver and lay face down and injured in the street. Civilians ran for their lives, sprinting away from the flamethrower, igniting everything in sight with a wild mind of its own. Minivans and buses slammed into one another in attempts to get clear of the station. Locals in the street, safe from the flames, now found themselves forced to dive out of the way of the military jeep that lurched in a wide arc to turn around, heading down the hill now and driven by the maniacal turbaned Kawaga who had started this catastrophe. Court headed east as fast as the jeep would go. The cover had popped free of the machine gun on the fixed base behind him. In his rear view, he could see the weapon bouncing with the undulations of the uneven dirt track. A pack of hobbled camels crossed in front of him, and he yanked the wheel to the right, crashed through a wooden stall selling fruit, sending a dozen bunches of bananas hanging from ropes flying into the air. He kept crashing through to the other side of the stall and found himself a block south of the road that would have led him to Whiskey Sierra's hide site. Just then, 2 military jeeps pulled up to the intersection in front of him. Fuck. Court whizzed past them, and they turned in behind and began giving chase.
Tango's on my ass, Zack.
Copy that.
Can you go one block south, or do I need to come to you guys?
We'll meet you in the alleyway, a left turn behind the hotel. When you pick us up, scoot over. Brad will drive.
And then?
You never could drive for shit.
Roger that.
Court did not deny Hightower's charge. The passages and alleyways were a thick congestion of man, animal, machine, and other impediments to an operator trying to make haste in a motor vehicle. Gentry leaned on the horn as he drove. A rickshaw and a donkey cart with a 55-gallon water drum blocked the way just ahead of Court on his new route, so he jacked the wheel, went right one more block, and then took another hard left. Here, he was forced to slam on the brakes to avoid a small crowd of children and sheep in the street, and he knew the two army jeeps pursuing him were right behind. Quickly, he pulled the emergency brake, leapt up to the driver's seat, and vaulted into the back, his shoulder injury protesting even through the pain-killing effects of the massive amounts of adrenaline coursing through him. The two jeeps made the turn, and they, too, skidded and stopped, a huge, lingering dust cloud formed by the act. Court spun the PKM machine gun back around at the vehicles and pulled back the charging handle to rack around. He was close enough to see the eyes of the driver of the closest jeep widen in surprise, and the black soldier ground his transmission, frantically yanking his gear shift into reverse. Court pointed right at the hood of the jeep and pulled the trigger of the big Russian weapon. Click. The weapon was unloaded. God damn it. Court drew his Glock 19 and fired an entire magazine at the two jeeps as they backed around the corner, their green bodies slamming into one another more than once in a desperate attempt to flee the withering handgun fire. It was no belt-fed machine gun, but at the moment, the 9mm handgun was a hell of a lot more valuable. As soon as they disappeared from view, he leapt back into the front seat, released the brake, and lurched forward. He'd popped the clutch, stalling the jeep. The windshield next to his head exploded in a spiderweb of cracks as a rifle round struck it. Shit! He refired the engine and launched forward again. 30 seconds later, he finally made it to the rally point, and he found the surviving four members of Whiskey Sierra engaged in a fierce firefight, their weapons cracking and snapping as they sent rounds towards a row of buildings at the end of the alleyway to the east. Enemy grenades exploded just short of their targets, and return fire whistled by. Court put the jeep in park and leapt into the back. Again, his left shoulder hated him for doing so, and he went to work immediately loading a can of ammunition to the machine gun. Sierra 2 climbed into the driver's seat. Brad carried only a pistol now, which he fired over the front windshield. Seconds later, Hightower leapt into the passenger seat, took up a forward-firing position, and two dropped down behind the wheel to reload his sidearm and put the jeep in gear. Sierra 3 next came out from behind a row of barrels next to a big generator. On his back was Sierra 4, and in his right hand was a Sudanese Mara pistol that, Court assumed, he'd gleaned from a fallen enemy. Dan dumped his wounded colleague in the jeep's bed next to Court, and then dove in on top of him. Brad hit the gas, turned the jeep to the left, sending Court reeling in the back. Only his handhold on the machine gun kept him upright. Court re-racked the slide on the now loaded weapon and opened up with a burst on the barrels on the corner as they drove off. Immediately, the fuel inside ignited, and a massive explosion erupted across the alley, black smoke obscuring the Americans' retreat. In under a minute, they were on the paved road that led out of town. Twice they'd passed infantry while negotiating the maze of alleys in the shanties, but the speed and the confusion of the quick encounters had kept both meetings bloodless. Sierra 3 remained at Gentry's feet, his handgun and his eyes trained on the 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock sector around the vehicle. His pistol could not do what Six's machine gun could, but if he saw threats, he knew he could direct the gray man to engage them with the jeep's heavy weapon. He also knew the gray man would cover from 3 to 6 o'clock, and Brad and Zack would cover the two quarter slices of the pie in front of them. Sierra 4 was in the back as well, but he was unconscious now from blood loss. Court leaned nearer to Zack's head and shouted over the noise of the speeding vehicle, "Hey, you make a left up here and I can get us a new ride!" Zack thought it over for less than a second. "Let's do it!" He instructed Brad to follow Court's instructions. They made the turn to the south at the top of a hill and ran directly into a military checkpoint. Easily a dozen GOS infantry were in the middle of a road lined on both sides by clay walls of private homes. Court aimed the PKM and blasted a parked technical, exploding the pickup truck and blowing men down to the dirt at 20 yards. Other troops fired at the Americans as they shot up the road at 50 miles an hour. Brad sped through the smoke and came out on the other side.
To the left of the jeep, a wounded infantryman lying on his back in the street rolled quickly to his knees, raised his weapon, and raked the open-topped vehicle with automatic fire from 15 feet. Court had been shooting in the opposite direction and therefore saw the threat late, but he spun the PKM towards the gunfire, blasted the soldier back against a brown wall in a spatter of blood, and then looked down at his exposed body, fully expecting to see he'd been shot. Miraculously, he had not.
"Hang on!"
shouted Brad, and Court knelt in the jeep with his hands on the machine gun just as the vehicle went airborne at the top of a crest in the road, sending it crashing down on its axle before it bottomed out and cleared the area. A few seconds later, Brad reached for his chest rig, hugging himself with his right arm while he drove with his left.
"Damn it!" "What is it?"
asked Zack, still scanning his sector.
"Think I fucking popped a rib when we hit back there."
"You good?"
asked Hightower.
"Yeah, I'm good. I just..."
The break in the response turned Sierra's One's head to his driver. Brad continued to hold the wheel with his left hand, his foot almost to the floor, but his right hand was up in front of his face. His fingers were coated in thick, rich blood.
"Son of a..."
Sierra 2's hand slowly dropped in his lap. His head bobbed to the side and then fell forward towards the steering wheel.
"Three, drive!"
Zack pulled Brad out of the driver's seat and across his own body. The entire left side of 2's torso was drenched in blood. An enemy round had pierced his side between his underarm and his armor. Dan crawled over the back seat and slid behind the wheel as the jeep began veering to the left. He pushed down on the accelerator and turned just in time to avoid a crash with a high gravel mound by the side of the road. Gentry knelt over Dan seconds later and yelled to be heard.
"Hey man, I think you're hit. There's fresh blood all over the place back here, and I can't find a leak in me."
As he drove, Dan felt over his own body. After several seconds, Gentry leaned back over again.
"GSW, left shoulder!"
Dan looked, found that he'd taken a gunshot wound high in the front of his left shoulder, less than 2 inches from the jugular vein in his neck. He bled like a stuck pig, but kept driving on. Soon, they arrived at the home where Court met Mohammed earlier in the day. The small Škoda sedan was still in the courtyard. It took Gentry a couple of minutes to find the keys where he had tossed them in the dust. During that time, the wounded Dan took the one rifle left with the team and guarded the front gate, and Zack gave CPR to Brad on the ground next to the jeep.
"Come on, Bradley. Don't fucking chicken shit out on me. Walk it off!"
he shouted at a man who, Court could tell even from across the courtyard, was clearly dead. But Zack didn't want to see it himself. Court wondered if Sierra 1 was trying to revive both Sierra 2 and Sierra 5 with the futile treatment. Zack did not give up for nearly 5 minutes. By then, Gentry had the injured Sierra 4 in the back of the Škoda, with Dan bandaged perfunctorily and sitting next to him. He helped Zack put Sierra 2's body in the trunk. Court then led Hightower to the passenger seat. Court took the wheel, and the vehicle left the gate of the home and headed north. Its four white men of war hidden behind tinted windows. Chapter 42. 20 minutes later, the Škoda drove under a flight of four Sudanese army helicopters that were following the highway from Port Sudan down to all the activity in Swakin. The choppers continued on and disappeared in Gentry's rearview mirror. Hightower had not spoken at all. He seemed utterly spent, dejected, nearly unconscious. The injured four was passed out in the back seat, and three looked like his moderate blood loss from the shoulder wound, plus the other wears and tears of the morning, had left him completely worn out. After a while, Zack pushed himself up from his seat with difficulty. He had Court lean forward over the steering wheel as he drove, and Sierra 1 pulled the robe off his shoulder to check his wound.
"Your back smells nasty."
"Yeah,"
Court replied, distractedly, scanning the skies ahead for another chopper. This tiny team of wounded and virtually unarmed men was in no condition to fight anyone. Gentry was desperate to keep them away from any threat more potent than a head cold.
"I know this place is filthy, but how does a wound get that kind of putrefied stink in 4 hours?
"Don't know. You got any antibiotics?"
"Negative. We just brought basic trauma shit. Used most of all of it, didn't we, Danny?"
"Yeah, boss,"
But Sierra 3 took some of the clean bandaging from his shoulder wound, tore it free, and handed it up to Zack. Hightower took some tape from his med pouch and positioned 3's gauze over the hole in Gentry's back to stanch any more bleeding. It was a perfunctory job, just marginally better than nothing.
You'll make it. When we get to the Hannah, we'll get you fixed up.
Cool, said Cort.
He wasn't worried about it, though it hurt like hell. Hightower's satellite phone buzzed in its chest pouch. The device was blackened with dirt and soot and oil and blood, but at least it was still functional. Sierra 1 had pulled off his headset while attempting to revive Sierra 2, so he just pressed the speakerphone button.
Go for Sierra 1.
It was Denny Carmichael. There was no hello, no how are you.
I just got a call from the White House. They say the U.S. ambassador to Sudan is asking if there is some sort of agency involvement in what he is describing as, and I quote, a Black Hawk down.